Welcome to episode 27 of season 9 of Movie Around Midnight, the Daily Podcast, where we yippee-ki our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4.0 and A Good Day to Die Hard, Die Hard 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to start off another movie, even though we are mid-season, is my good friend Jake Cluett of Life Versus Film and the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Rob. We first to make the joke, this isn't a good day to talk about this film.
But
let's talk about it anyway.
I don't think any day is a good day to talk about this film, but we'll do it for a few days here.
When we talk about the final segment, that'll be a good day to talk about this film.
Yes. That's true, but we'll go through 21 episodes. I think we can manage. Hopefully the listeners will also manage through the 21 episodes, because hopefully we will have some interesting things to say about these 21 segments.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I hadn't seen this film since its initial DVD release. I didn't see it in the cinema, I had forgotten everything. It was better than I thought it was going to be. Everything that happened was a surprise. I remembered nothing. When they're like, hey, we're gonna go to Chernobyl, I was like, wait, this one goes to Chernobyl? I don't remember this one going to Chernobyl. Okay. But it wasn't as bad. It's still number 5 in terms of Die Hard films. Yeah, but it could have been, it was worse in my memory than it was actually experiencing it.
Okay. I can agree with that. Just even going through these three segments, again, it's been probably at least a year, if not longer, since I saw this last. And I also just didn't remember anything about it.
You're a completionist. We know this. When you watch Die Hard 1, do you then have to? I know you understand. You watch 2 and 3. Do you watch 4 and 5 every time you watch 1? Do you do the full franchise every time?
Not every time. No.
Okay, good.
No. Because again, for me, and I've talked about this many times. For me, this is a trilogy.
The trilogy. So, yeah.
You know, there isn't a problem if I'm not watching the two appendices. I guess you can call it
the fan films, the fan fiction they tacked onto the end of it.
I mean, I got to correct something that we said, I'm pretty sure, 27 episodes ago. Len Wiseman didn't direct this movie.
John Moore, not someone I'm familiar with.
No, not at all. The last time I watched this movie was August 6th, 2024. So it's been almost a year. And again, I didn't remember anything about it. So it was nice going back into it again. When you look at a movie the way that we're looking at it, so it changes the entire perspective of how you view a movie. You're not necessarily just looking at the plot; you're looking at everything else around it. So
yeah,
my assumption is that my experience with this movie will actually get a slight bump up from, I mean, again, when I looked at my rating of when I watched it back in August, and I gave it a 1 out of 10. Okay.
Cool. Now, okay.
I know that number will be higher if and when I rewatch this, which I plan to rewatch the entire thing also, maybe even later today or tomorrow, just to have the entire movie, I guess, closer in my memory, when I'm doing this. Even though I will be obviously doing each segment, over the next few weeks from that perspective.
Of course.
But was it?
I said like John Moore, not someone I'm familiar with. I like a John Moore film. I've just had a look. He directed the remake of Flight of the Phoenix, a film I enjoy, despite starring Dennis Quaid.
I was gonna say, how can you see a movie with Dennis Quaid? I know my customers here.
Because he's kind of like irascible and surly in that, and that's a kind of a Dennis Quaid kind of role. It's when he plays good guys that I like, this doesn't sit well with me. You're not a good guy. Look at that face. You're a bad guy. But yeah, I like, if you were asking me to do my top 5 John Moore films, which you're not, I'd be like, number 1, Fly the Phoenix. Number 2, A Good Day to Die Hard, end of list, because I didn't see Behind Enemy Lines, The Omen, Max Payne, or whatever IT is. some random Pierce Brosnan film, apparently.
Interesting. I mean, he's only directed 8 movies, which then again also makes you wonder why they would have given him this movie to do. But okay. So I've seen 4 of the 8. I've seen Flight of the Phoenix, Behind Enemy Lines, Max Payne, and A Good Day to Die Hard. You know, and I don't even know how I. There's a good chance I would actually even say Flight of the Phoenix is the best of the 4.
I would say it's great. Hugh Laurie's fantastic in it.
Yes.
Giovanni Ribisi's having fun as a model playmaker.
That's great. Yeah. No, I have no idea what IT is either. I see that it's on here.
No one does.
Yeah.
There's no way to find
it. It's really interesting that when you and I were talking about this on the first episode, you know, we were both completely sure that this movie was directed by Len Wiseman also.
So. I mean, I'm gonna guess I was following your lead because I had no idea.
Well, apparently yeah. Neither did I, because at the time I, you know, hadn't started I didn't really look into it. So that's on me. Oh well.
Now we know. John Moore. Yes, apologies.
That we do. Okay, so this movie was released on February 14th, 2013, because this is definitely a movie that you released Valentine's on Day. Valentine's yeah. Day. There's, you know, sure. If you're gonna, if you were to ask me about all the thousands upon thousands of movies that are out there, what is the best movie to release on Valentine's Day? I'm gonna say A Good Day to Die Hard. You know, that's because this is a really, really captivating love story. You know, so
yeah, there's real prominent female characters. Not that you need to have female characters for a love story, but real prominent romance throughout the film.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, I'm very confused as to why it was released on February 14th. Makes no sense whatsoever.
It was probably counter programming, maybe against something else. But well, you always well, get. I think the RoboCop remake was released on Valentine's Day. I want to say, I think, in the UK at least, Dallas Buyers Club came out on Valentine's Day, I think, and I definitely saw Paddington on my own on Valentine's Day, I think the first one. Films are going to come out all kinds of times. Right, not everyone goes to the cinema to celebrate the other events.
Four Die Hard movies came out in the summer, so like why? They must
right, but two of them are Christmas films, so. It's all madness.
Christmas films only are supposed to come out in the summer. You know, it's Christmas in July, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
No. They should come out in November. Late November is when they should come out.
Okay. Fair enough. Do you know what the budget of this movie was?
Not a clue.
$92 million.
Surprisingly high.
Yeah, yeah. Considering, yes. And how much do you think it made?
Less than that.
It
cleared well, it. Okay,
one
well.
One second. Well, we will get to that. Less than that. Define what you mean by less than that.
Less than where? 92 million.
No, but where?
Worldwide. Why would you look at anything else?
Okay. So domestically in the US, it only made 67 million. Okay. Internationally, it made another 237 million, with a total of 304 million worldwide.
Do you know how much of that was in Russia? Is that available?
I didn't look into that.
Okay, no worries.
Who knows? It's possible. It's definitely possible. Okay, so when it came out on Valentine's Day weekend, where do you think it debuted domestically in the top 10?
I don't know what else came out that day, so I'm just going to guess.
Escape from Planet Earth, Safe Haven, okay. And Beautiful Creatures.
God, a murderous row of films released. Wow, I hope something good came out the week before. Yeah, I can't see any of them hit number one. That's a bad weekend. So I'm going to say it's hit number 4.
No, actually. It debuted at number 1.
Oh, okay, well. And it nosedived.
It made 24 million, almost 25 million on its opening weekend, which again, if it only made 67, you know, that there were all those people who got duped by going out to see it the first weekend. Oh, a Die Hard movie. See, again, I didn't see this one in the theater either. This is this one I saw on video or on DVD a few months after it came out. And I am quite grateful for that I didn't spend the money to go see this in the theater. It knocked Identity Thief out of the number one spot.
Oh my god.
And it only outgrossed Identity Thief that weekend by less than $1 million.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
For which movie? For Identity
Both.
Thief?
Well, I mean, Identity Thief isn't good either, but for a Die Hard film to barely beat Identity Thief, not in its first week.
Yes, Identity Thief was, Identity Thief was in its second week, but still.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. That's just crazy. And then the rest of the top 10 was Safe Haven, Escape from Planet Earth, Warm Bodies, Beautiful Creatures, Side Effects, Silver Linings Playbook, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, and Zero Dark Thirty.
I'd like exactly one of those films. I think Side Effects is a good film. The rest of them I'm not particularly fond of.
I like Zero Dark Thirty. Even I don't think it's perfect, but
I just remember it being long and grueling.
It tries to tell too much. It doesn't focus itself well. That's my point.
Yeah, it's a well made film. It's just not one I go back to a lot. And Warm Bodies is a better book than it is a film.
Okay, I have not read the book, so I couldn't tell you. Okay, so the following weekend, where do you think it hits in the top 10?
I'm going to guess it went down. I don't think it stayed at number one. Let's go down to number three.
It's number five.
Five, okay.
Yeah, and that weekend, Dark Skies and Snitch came out. I don't even know what either of those are. But Identity Thief...
Snitch, I think, is that one of the Rock films? I think.
Maybe. Identity Thief retook the number one spot with just 14 million that weekend. And Good Day to Die Hard only made 10.
Snitch is the film where The Rock plays, I think, like a professional driver of some kind. One of those films, one of the Rock films.
Okay. Got it. Okay, so the third weekend, where do you think it's listed in the top 10?
Number 9.
Perfect. Very good.
Hey.
It made 4.5 million that weekend.
Just clinging in there.
Yeah, 21 and Over and The Last Exorcism Part 3 are the movies that... and Jack the Giant Slayer. Those are the ones that came out that weekend.
The wasteland that was February in the 2010s.
Exactly. Seriously. Jack the Giant Slayer was number 1 with Identity Thief number 2. 21 and Over 3, followed by Snitch, The Last Exorcism, Escape from Planet Earth, Safe Haven, Silver Linings Playbook, A Good Day to Die Hard, and then Dark Skies. Okay, how many more weeks do you think it stayed in the top 10?
I can say at most one.
And you would be overshooting it. This was last weekend. It only made it 3 weeks within the top 10. We don't have anything to discuss about where this movie went, because it just went down from that point. It
just went down, yeah.
Exactly. So there are two versions of this movie. There is the theatrical version, which is an hour and 38 minutes, and the special edition extended version, which has an extra 3 minutes in it, which is the one we're going to be talking about over the next 21 episodes. Because it's mostly seen by most people that the extended version is I guess slightly better than the
far superior.
Again, I've seen the theatrical version, and I will be also talking about the discrepancies that I've noticed. I didn't go onto any website to see what the differences are. You know, as I watched each segment, in order to prepare for this. So I decided I was just going to watch those same 5 minutes and see how they line up and stuff like that. So we shall see over the next 21 weeks how they actually 21 episodes how they actually line up and add those 3 minutes I'm not going to give a second count or anything like that, so have no fear. Okay, so let's begin talking about this movie.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay, so the movie starts off with the 20th Century Fox logo, which takes up a lot of the first minute. I guess it's a good thing we're not doing this minute by minute, because there's a...
We've already talked about it before.
That's true. No, what do you mean? We've talked about the 20th Century Fox logo. No, but then we have 30 seconds of a black screen, which yes. really works. I gotta understand. Now I know why the director needed to make a director's cut and add in 30 seconds of a black screen where we hear protesters and people speaking in Russian in the background, and that's it. You know, it doesn't really give us really
sets the scene.
It sets the scene for the fact that this movie is very dark and black.
Yes.
Yes. And then we get a news report on the screen. With a reporter talking about, you know, a reporter from BBC World News talking about the mass.
Sophie Raworth.
Are you saying that because you looked up who it is, or are you saying that because you recognize her? Is she a real?
She's a real British news reporter. She's from BBC News. She's one of those reporters who, is in a bunch of stuff as herself. She's in loads. She's one of those just notable, like, you need a newscaster to play themselves. Sophie Raworth will do it.
Okay,
she's one of them.
if she's willing to do it, why not? If that works. So she starts talking about the fact that there is she says the authorities in Russia are bracing themselves today for mass protests against the trial of former billionaire Yuri Komarov. The case against Mr. Komarov has caused widespread division amongst the Russian public. Some of whom view his incarceration as a political maneuver orchestrated by this man. And then we get another picture on screen. It's a defense minister candidate, Viktor Chigarin. Again, it's a nice way to give us this little quick explanation as to who these two men are, since they both play a lot of. They play important parts throughout this movie, so it's a nice way just to throw that in there. Now, do you think this is John who's watching this, or is this Jack?
Ooh, that's a good question. I hadn't even thought. I just thought, hey, no one's watching this. This is just on. Because we know when we see John, he's at a shooting range, so we're introduced to him. So it'd be an odd place to be watching TV. But Jack is in Russia. I reckon it's Jack. For no reason.
Okay, my guess actually is it's John.
Okay.
Because it's in English.
True.
And if Jack is in Russia, he wouldn't. Well, obviously he can be watching BBC World News, but maybe there would be subtitles or something like that. I don't know.
That is true. I'm going by. We do see. Like an out of focus figure in the foreground who's the person watching that.
That's right.
And the silhouette to me looks more like Jai Courtney than it does Bruce Willis, but we don't see much of them.
Right.
So that's pure speculation.
Yeah. Again, I obviously see the exact same thing you do, but I think it is John.
Fine.
But again, it's 50-50. Could go either way.
Yeah, I just. It looks like Jai Courtney's fuzzy ear, not Bruce Willis. But yeah, it's fine. Either way, it matters not.
Again, it's actually, you know what? I'm gonna reverse my.
Yeah,
my
I win.
No, I'll tell you why. Because John knows nothing about Russia right now. You know, he hasn't found out yet that Jack is in Russia.
Yes, okay.
And like it, so yeah. I don't think that John would be spending his time watching a news report about something that's going on in Russia right now. Like, why would he care at this point?
Yeah, that would be quite the coincidence.
Okay, and based on what's going to be happening over the course of you know the three segments that we will be together with over the next 3 days, it would make more sense that Jack is the one who is watching this. So, okay, I take back what I said before.
And John would definitely have said, like, "Oh, Komarov, I heard about you on the news yesterday." He definitely would have. I've heard about this guy. He would have
That's true.
said something along those lines.
Yeah, he would have said,
So
I think
yes.
you were out of your league on Nightline or something like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah, some
Moscow, Finland.
exactly. So yeah, I now that I think about it, I believe it is Jack. That makes sense. Okay, and then the shot changes, and we are in a prison. Surprisingly. We see Shigarin walking into a prison, and we see in the distance that Komarov is actually there. He's in a cell, and he's playing a game by himself. He's playing
Yes.
chess.
Which is how you can tell he's Russian, because he's playing chess. Otherwise, no idea.
Well, no, you see, you could tell because they just told us before that he was in Moscow,
Yeah.
but
So it's they're hitting all of the Russian stereotypes. Ah, playing chess. Russians love chess. We know that.
that's true. That's true. Okay, so Jay, what do you know about the game of chess?
I know how to play it. I found this, will surprise no one. I founded my school's chess club, and I also instigated the rule that if you win the tournament, you can't then compete the following year, because I came third in the first year, and I knew there were two guys better than me, and so I came second in the second year, and then I won in the third year because they couldn't compete anymore.
Very clever, very clever. Nice checkmate. I think you checkmated both of them.
This is a really, really immoral way to start a chess club. I don't know if it's still going. But I taught my granddad how to play
You
chess.
won, so you can't participate
Yeah.
anymore. Yeah.
I won, and then fourth year, I'd left. Gone. Yeah, I taught my granddad to play chess. My nephew wanted to play chess, so he was really interested to play chess. And my nephew was seven. So I taught him how to play chess. I taught him how to lose at chess, and then he doesn't want to play anymore. Because I
Wait,
don't
did you do that on
I
purpose?
yeah, I can't ask.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure your sister is very proud of you. You know, especially since she's probably listening and now knows why her son doesn't like chess.
Oh, this isn't the one podcast of mine she's ever listened to.
No, I know, I know.
Don't worry.
I've heard the stories before, I know.
Yeah, I'm sure I should know the origins of chess. But I don't. I just know that it's been a while since I've played it properly, but I do know how to play.
Okay, well, one of the things about chess, obviously it's a game that only two people can play. It is a game that it's a strategy game that involves absolutely no hidden information, and there are no elements of chance. The board has 64 squares arranged in an 8x8 grid, and you have two sides, which are usually white and black, which sometimes they're different colors or whatever. Each side has 16 pieces. They have a king, a queen, two rooks, two bishops, two knights, and eight pawns. And each of the pieces have a different way that they can move within the game. If you land on the space that your opponent's piece lands on, so then you take it off the board. That's the idea is to make it that the enemy king has nowhere to go, and that you basically it's I guess Game of Thrones. How do you kill the king?
Yeah, you trap him. Yeah, yeah. It's the your description says there's no chance. There's no element of chance. I think that's true. If it's like a high level game of chess, if it's a lower level game of chess, then there is a chance, because like the chance that the person
No, it's
hasn't
just
seen.
stupidity. It's the idea of stupidity, but it's the idea of not
Right, but there's
yeah.
still a little chance now. There's a chance like that your opponent's distracted in some way and didn't see
Yeah, but
what you're doing.
that's not the idea of a game of chance. A game of chance is if you're
I get
rolling
it.
the
I get
dice,
it.
you
It's
don't
like,
know what it's
toss
going
a coin, roll a dice kind of thing.
to be. Exactly. It's the idea that whatever the moves that you make are
deliberate,
are going to depend on the outcome of what's going to happen.
Sure. Yeah. At the,
right.
Yeah.
So the idea of the game of chess is connected to other games that were played in the 7th century in India and in Persia, and then it spread to the Arab world and eventually reached Europe. The game that we know now as chess basically was started in Europe at the end of the 15th century. And by the end of the 19th century, then everything was solidified as to what you know, what type of the moves and how the game is played and stuff like that. They started chess competitions also in the late 19th century, mostly starting in France, and they had chess championship. The original first chess champion game was played in 1886. And the first chess champion, his name is Willem Steinitz, who won that year.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, there's also, you know, the whole idea of can humans play better chess than computers, and you know, the whole thing with something that fits with you, you know, the Deep Blue, which was the first computer to beat a reigning world champion when Garry Kasparov was defeated in 1997.
Yeah. Deep Blue. But I would be okay with Deep Blue being pushed into the sea, personally. I don't like robots playing chess.
I understand. But
it's like a bad idea.
C for chess. Yeah, there you go.
C for cattlemen.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. So, again, you know, the bottom line is that chess is considered one of the most popular board games in the world right now. And
yeah.
It is played by millions of people every day at somewhere. You know, I'm not much of a chess fan. I know how to play.
No,
I don't.
I'm not good.
Exactly. I don't find myself very good either. But yeah.
I find it difficult to plan that far ahead. ADHD is bad for this kind of thing sometimes.
Okay. I can see that as a problem. So at this point, you know, we see that Kasparov is I'm going to get so confused with these names throughout the entire movie.
Yeah. It's all right. One of them's not around for that much longer.
That's right. So Kasparov and Chigarin. So Kasparov then says to him, "What do you want, Victor?" And he goes, "Why are you doing this?" And he goes, "What do you want to accomplish tomorrow?" He goes, "I'm prepared to pay for my sins." And he goes, "You should probably prepare yourself too." He goes, "Yuri, let's be civil about this. We were friends once. We could be again. Just give me the file, and I'll hand your life back to you. Forget this stupid trial." And he says, "I don't want my life back." He goes, "You think I'm going to let you talk tomorrow? No one is going to hear you. I own everybody in that courtroom.
That's redundancies in there. I don't like, you think I'm going to let you talk? No one will hear you. I own everyone." So he only needs one of these. Either he's not going to let him talk, or he's going to talk and no one will hear him, or he owns everyone in the courtroom. He doesn't need all three.
Yes.
It's overkill. It's bad planning.
Bad planning from a corrupt politician. What can you do?
Yeah.
Whatever. Again, they're setting this whole thing up for us. You know, we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen, you know, over the course of this movie with these characters, and find out, you know, who is the better bad guy, I guess you can say, like the more gooder bad guy, or the
yeah. The problem with the bad guys in this film is none of them pop. None of them are like, "Hey, that guy was great."
No,
no, there's no, you know, there's no one even close to Alan Rickman or just anyone. No William Sadler or anything.
Yes, yeah. There's even no Thomas Gabriel here. You know, it's just not.
Yeah, I think not only there's only one like supporting cast member I can think of who's we'll get to him in a couple of days. As like, one guy in the film, we're like, yeah, that guy was fun, but he's in the film for a total of 2 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
but we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. But again, this you know they're setting up this whole political corruption thing and trying to show us.
It's just no fun.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a lot about this during when I talked about Die Hard 4 with all my guests that. It's a Die Hard 4 was a fun action movie, but it doesn't feel like a Die Hard movie, and this doesn't feel like either. It doesn't feel like an action movie, and it also doesn't feel like a Die Hard movie. It feels just completely it's a hanging chad,
Sure. Yeah.
So that it's problematic from that perspective, and at this point, we are almost 3 minutes into the movie. That's when the credits begin, and we get 20th Century Fox, and then we get a quick headline that we're at CIA headquarters, and we see a lot of hustle and bustle, as the credits continue, and there's a female agent that comes and knocks on the window and goes, Mike,
she is walking with purpose. She is the most determined. She was told, okay, walk like you mean it, off screen.
Chigar's making a move on Kamarov. And he goes, oh, shit. And I'll see if we got local. And that's it. That's all they say here.
Yeah, that's it. That was a real useful scene.
Exactly. We have no idea who any of these people are. They're fillers.
Moving on.
While they're, just continuing with the credits on screen. And then they send us back to Moscow.
Yep.
And we get about a minute of credits with someone riding on a motorcycle, and we find out it's the female one of the females in the movie. Let's leave it at that for now. We see someone drive up in a van. They show us some of the sights of Moscow. As we go through the credit, they want us to be looking more at the credits than what's going on. Then we see Jai Courtney, right after his name is on screen, get out of this van and start walking. He walks to the back of the back tire and takes something out. We never find out what it is that he takes out there. And then the motorcycle shows up inside of a parking lot. And then we see Jai Courtney on a phone. Again, we have absolutely no idea what he's saying, what's going on, what is being told. The credits just continue. I do like the shot when he's in the phone, how they do a 360 around him. And then, they show us that there's this this nightclub, that's a very happening nightclub, in the middle of Moscow.
Let's go. Yeah,
and then we finally get to see who this woman is who's on the motorcycle. She starts taking off her jacket, and then they show us Jai Courtney taking off his jacket.
So the lady taking off her motorcycle jacket was all over the marketing for this film. Yes. It's on the poster. I feel like they cut that thing like 6 or 7 times into the trailer. And it's 3.5 minutes into the film for 2 seconds. I'm not saying, hey, this should be in the film more. I just don't like this kind of marketing. It's like the one salacious moment of the slightly salacious. The lady's getting off of a motorbike and taking her jacket off, which that shot doesn't need to be in the film.
No.
Let alone then plaster. Like you can just imagine, like, oh, 12-year-old boys go like, you've seen the new Die Hard trailer. There's a lady. You see her bra. You see her bra. It's just awful. It's really bad marketing and filmmaking.
It really is. And then the next thing we see that this woman is actually in the same apartment with Chigar, and see her in the room with him. And then after that we see someone knocking on a door, and a little window in the door opens up, and someone in a chef or maitre d' uniform opens this little thing and is given given money by a mysterious hand. He takes the money and then opens the door, and then
Jack Gordon, you follow his mysterious butt.
That's right.
Through the kitchen.
it's a very strange choice to only focus on the waist length or waist height of the whole thing, because you see like a woman who's standing in the corner and you just see her waist also. It reminds me of something like if you have asked like a kid to
yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of like E.T.
Exactly. There you go. Elliot's doing the filming here, and he's doing everything at waist height. It's just a little strange. And then we see this butt in white pants and black shirt walk through the kitchen, and then he passes a desk where you see this Russian pimp looking guy eating with a few women behind him that are scantily clad. Makes you wonder what's going on there. And then
Russian nightclub kitchen. Exactly. Don't know what to tell you.
That's right. Apparently that's what happens in a Russian nightclub, in the kitchen. And then this guy takes a gun from under a napkin and cocks the gun as he continues walking, and then the shot changes and we're back with the woman in Chigarin. And then we hear we're ready to get started. He goes, make the call. And again, the dialogue here is really bad also. And then it jumps back once again.
Well, there's a nice transition. You have the transition of the jacket being taken off. Here, when they're up on the balcony, there's like a curtain billowing through, and then you cut back to Jai Courtney, and he's going through a curtain as well.
Right.
So there was some thought has been put into this. Okay. Some thought.
Okay.
Little bit. I don't know what it means, but there's a little bit of connective tissue. Curtain.
I don't know. At that point, we see Jai Courtney show up inside of this nightclub, and there's a guy surrounded by all these women, and then he's laughing, and then it goes back to the woman in Chigarin. You won't disappoint me. Have I ever disappointed you? Like, again, it makes no sense, this entire...
Who knows what's going on?
Exactly. It's so confusing.
But it's like, you don't know what's going on, but it's also not terribly interesting. Like, I quite like the Jai Courtney going through the kitchen stuff. That's, you kind of see there's momentum, there's action. He's doing something, there's a gun, it's all secrets. You can see something interesting is going on there. But the conversation with the two people we don't really know, I don't care. I'm not gripped. I'm not like, I want to keep watching this film to find out who these people are.
That's right.
I'm good. I don't mind. I'm fine.
Right. And then Jai Courtney, we're back to him, and he's walking through this nightclub. You see women dancing on the side, and then it goes back once again to the couple. And again, nothing is really happening here.
Yep.
It's just basically for us a way for us to see the credits, and then we get to see that this was written by Skip Woods.
Sure.
Hopefully, Skip Woods has done some interesting things in his career. You have any idea? Because if you wrote this movie, I don't really know if you necessarily want to say that.
He's written a bunch of bad movies, I can tell you that much. Looking at his CV, I do enjoy Swordfish, but he's not. It's not great. He wrote Hitman. He wrote X-Men Origins Wolverine, easily the worst X-Men film. The A-Team's fine. The Hitman sequel, Sabotage, that Schwarzenegger film.
Yeah,
he's not. It's not a great CV.
Yeah, I love how on IMDb he gets writing credit for Sabotage alternate endings.
Great. Good for him.
And Sabotage alternate ending.
It counts. It's a separate release. It counts.
Apparently. See, I'm not the biggest fan of Swordfish. The funny
It's
thing
not good,
is
but I
on
think it's
this
silly.
list,
It's fun.
X-Men Origins Wolverine is my favorite of all of them, and far ahead of everything.
Oh, no, it's so bad.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's my favorite of all of these.
But no, it's even the A-Team?
Yeah. Again,
Oh,
I
good
grew up
God.
on the TV show, so the movie I didn't like the movie as well as much.
I've never seen the TV show, so I think the movie was fine, but I just think X-Men Origins Wolverine is a painful experience. I always think the one moment that really gets me is he like uses his claws to cut an X in a door, and so like you get three diagonal lines go one way and three the other way, and the little diamonds in between where they cross over don't fall out; they just kind of stay in place. Is what I so. That's how it is in my head. I don't know if that's actually real or not, but that's how I remember it being just terrible.
Fair
Anyway,
enough. Fair enough.
Skip Woods,
And
I'm not sad that you don't write films anymore.
he has one credit, or no, sorry, he has three. Let's say he has three credits after this. He has Sabotage, Sabotage, Alternate Endings, and Hitman Agent 47. Those are
Sure.
his, his movies that he's written since then. He's got two upcoming movies, In
We'll
Defense of
see.
Sleeping Beauty and Kane and Lynch.
Yeah, sometimes people have stuff in development for a long time and then it just doesn't happen. And I'm going to say that's what we're looking at here.
Yes.
Oh, in Defense of Sleeping Beauty, he's also down for directing that.
That's right.
Oh, God. Good luck to him.
We're looking forward to seeing what that is. Not necessarily to see
Can't
the movie.
wait.
Not necessarily to see the movie, but to see what it is. That's what's important. And then Shigaran leaves her, and she starts smiling. And then we're back with Jai Courtney in the nightclub, and he goes, "Anton." And we hear a phone ringing, and Alec, it's Victor. And Yuri Komarov says hello. And like they keep
And
switching
goodbye.
back. They keep switching back and forth. And then Shigaran says, it's time to grab him. Like it makes no sense putting these two scenes together. Editing them the
Yeah,
way that they edited here. And
it's
the
not
guy on the
good.
couch gets up and doesn't understand, what Jack is actually saying to him. And then he goes, he started saying Yuri Komarov says hello, and he goes, Yuri Komarov, and he goes, and goodbye. And then he pulls out the gun and starts shooting. Again, and he from what we can see, he actually shoots one of the women. He doesn't even shoot the guy he's supposed to be shooting.
I thought that, but I do think he shoots Anton. I think that the woman, I think he shoots Anton in the head, and the women are just reacting to that.
Is that what it is? Maybe.
I think so,
It's
because I think
really
Jack
hard
is
to
supposed to be a good shot.
Well,
Yeah,
again,
because I think if yeah, Anton gets a bullet hole
oh yes,
bang in his forehead.
there is
Yeah,
a okay.
and the women on either side of him just kind of like react and fall away from him and scream. As they should
Yes.
in that situation. Yeah.
Right. And then someone tackles him, and then fade to black. And then we get a thing on the screen saying, directed by John Moore. And that's
Yeah,
actually
he
how
wanted to make
this
sure you
segment
could
ends.
definitely read that. Nothing else on the screen. He's proud of this one.
That's right. He directed a Die Hard movie. It's more than either one of us can say.
Mean, did he? Is it a Die Hard movie?
He directed a movie with Die Hard in the title that features Bruce Willis. How's that?
Okay,
Is
fine.
that a better way to describe that?
Yes, good for him. I'm sure he'd set out to make something better.
And
Maybe
I
he thinks
think
it's great. Maybe he is proud of it. I'm
maybe,
happy for him.
and I just realized after talking about this segment for 45 minutes, I never really said where the segment begins and ends. I'll do that now because it doesn't really make a difference. But
Starts at zero and ends at five.
so episode 27 begins with the 20th Century Fox logo and ends with the director's credit. There we go. And we just got to that director's credit. So, Jay,
Did.
did you have anything else you wanted to say about this fascinating 5-minute segment of this movie that makes no sense whatsoever.
No, I think we'll go into more some of the actors the next couple of days, I think. I think we've established what this film is going to be. I think we'd like the guy who plays chess with himself. I've never understood people play chess with themselves. Like, he plays chess and he spins the board around. He's like, but you, why? But yeah, I think we've established what this is,
Yes.
what this film is trying to
Yes.
do.
Yes. Well, we've established that this film makes no sense. At least in the first 5 minutes. Maybe things will become clearer a little later on. We'll have to wait and see about that one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Let's have high hopes that something like this will happen.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with having high hopes about it, is there?
Not at all. Not at all.
Exactly.
I'll end the episode on a high note. My favorite part about the whole film is the tagline. Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia is chef's kiss. It's beautiful.
Apparently, that's the best thing about the movie, right? Okay,
It is. It 100% is. What else would it be?
fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, so every day we have a segment, a game that I like to play that I know Jay doesn't like, but that's just because he's in
No,
England.
Jay isn't good at it.
Is that why you don't like it? Because you don't like games that you're not good
Yeah.
at.
Why would I like a game I'm not good at?
Okay.
This is a game that, unlike chess, that for me is entirely chance.
Okay, well you've played it already 4 times, so you'd think that maybe you would have studied up on it, knowing that you have another
You'd
more
think.
time to do it.
That feels like cheating. This is I'm playing the game.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so the game is State Your Motto, where I will give a state, and then I will give you 3 choices as to what the real state motto is, and you have to try and guess which one is from that particular state. Do you know where the state of Montana is?
America.
No, you want to be a little more specific.
No,
Do
in the middle somewhere.
you, no, I mean, do are you familiar with American geography or not really?
I mean, I am more familiar when
Well,
you're
just
recording with
Baltimore.
your map behind you.
Okay, well.
Montana is one of the ones that I don't know where it is. I reckon I could. You get those like online games. Like, try and put all the map, the states in position. I reckon I could do half. Montana is not one of them. I don't know. I don't know anyone from
Montana
Montana. Apologies to any listeners from
is in
Montana.
the almost as it's almost as far west as you can get. It touches Washington State all the way
Okay.
and it borders on Canada. Okay. All right,
Fair enough.
so your 3 choices for the state motto of Montana are by and by,
Where are we?
straight from the soil, and gold and silver.
Gold and silver feels like it would be more like gold rushy, but then that was heading west. Gold rush was heading west, and that is west. I'm gonna go with gold and silver.
And you would be correct, Jay. There you go. You
Oh my God.
got it. Yeah, logic, worked. You were able to figure that out. Excellent.
Ridiculous.
Okay, whatever. I didn't make up the state mottos.
No, I know. No, it's ridiculous that I got it right. Because I think I have guessed every single one of these, and I think I've got a reasonable record of
Okay. All right, so Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jake Lewitt?
yeah, two main places. I have a podcast and I have a blog. So the podcast is Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, where my good friend Mark Hoffmeyer, friend of the show, he and I go through every chapter of the Deep Blue Sea trilogy and films that we deem Deep Blue Sea adjacent in any kind of way. So at the moment we're covering some new releases. Dangerous Animals, featuring Jai Courtney of A Good Day to Die Hard, is great. Go and see it if it's still out in cinemas. If it's not, then watch it on streaming. It's fantastic. It truly is. It's like, it's rare that we love shark movies. We love new shark movies. It's rare that we actually get to It's rare we get a good one. This is like genuinely like a real fun time. So Dangerous Animals is my plug, and then lifeversusfilm.com is my blog, where I'm actually writing a bunch of stuff this year, but no one is not really one to read but me. It's just like me going through Twin Peaks episodes and filling in Spielberg blind spots. That's kind of it.
I've been I don't read the Twin Peaks stuff, but I read the other stuff. So yeah.
Okay.
You
Thank
know, someone is reading it. There you go. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So thank you everyone for joining us today on this Sunday episode. And I will be back tomorrow with Jay for our regularly scheduled Monday episode tomorrow.
For another good day to Die
There you
Hard.
go. But until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.